Welcome back to Legally Abled, the podcast. My name is Ashley Jacobson, and I am a certified rehabilitation counselor, and I received my master's in rehabilitation counseling from Michigan State University. I am also a third-year law student. Technically, I am in a two-year program, but when comparing to the traditional law school trajectory, I'm credit-wise in my third year. I started the blog and podcast Legally Abled because I entered into law school with a mission to serve the disability community. And as I approached the end of my law school career, I really got to thinking about how I can best do that. And I found throughout my time as a counselor that my clients with disabilities were largely misunderstood by law enforcement, and that applied whether they were the victim of a crime or whether they were alleged to have committed the crime. And so using my background and expertise in disability issues, I reached out to several different leaders in my community and offered to provide trainings related to people with disabilities and the law. And I found that there was a remarkable response to that. And I wanted to share some of my resources with, you know, the internet and the United States and people all around the country and the world, because it's such a huge issue. And it's not going to improve for people with disabilities in this country if we don't bring some of these issues to the nationwide awareness. So starting with the topic for today, I'm going to be discussing victims with disabilities. And I would like to preface this topic by saying that first and foremost, people with disabilities are people first. As I've mentioned previously on the blog and podcast, person first language is super important. We don't want to label somebody in a certain way unnecessarily, and we certainly don't want to portray people with disabilities in a light that shows them as being weak or vulnerable individuals, especially because in the vast majority of circumstances, that's just not the case. Now, today I'm going to talk about victims with disabilities who have been victims of crime, but I did want to mention first that people with disabilities are strong, capable, intelligent individuals, and they shouldn't be seen as vulnerable or weak simply because they have a disability. I had a law professor recently, when I said I wanted to work with the disability community as an attorney, respond to me by saying, "Oh, so you want to work with the pathetic and meek." And I was really taken aback by that, because here's a very intelligent professor who's got a lot of experience, especially experience working with the type of the law that could very commonly encounter a person with a disability. And to hear that professor use that type of language was shocking to me. And every time I hear somebody talk about a person with a disability in that way, it throws me for a loop. Because I have worked with so many people with disabilities who are not even close to pathetic or meek. And it angers me quite a bit to hear that population being talked about in that way. So I am going to talk about a unique group that is part of the disability community today, and that is a group of people with disabilities that have become victims of crimes. But I would like to emphasize that it is certainly not the goal of this podcast ever, especially in this episode, to portray a person with a disability as being weak simply because they have a disability, because that is just not what I believe, and it's not the truth about that population. So, with that being said, I am going to dive right into this topic of victims with disabilities. I recently provided this training to the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office, and they were very receptive to the material. And it made me realize that people with disabilities are a portion of victims that are still really misunderstood by the court system, by attorneys, by investigators, and sometimes by the criminals themselves. Oftentimes, you will see a person with a disability being victimized by somebody that they know personally, usually a family member. And the misconception that that family member may have about the person with a disability in their family, and too often, the reason they choose that person to be a victim of their crime is because they think that that person is weak, that they think that person won't be able to successfully communicate what has happened to the correct people. And they think that worse comes to worse, if it were to result in legal action, this victim would not be able to talk on the stand, or they wouldn't be taken seriously as a witness in court. And there are very real systemic patterns that have led to those beliefs. Most of those patterns have developed over the years in a way where we're starting to understand certain disability populations better. And part of that is also seeing a person with a disability in that family being mistreated by the legal system and thinking, well, the legal system hasn't done them any favors in the past, so I'm probably going to get away with this now. But I really want to focus on the specific statistics in the United States today. So victims with disabilities have been researched internationally and nationally. In the international research, there have been a few really big studies that have been done. The first study that I'm going to talk about is by Cross, Kay, and Ratnovsky from 1993. And that study found that children with disabilities specifically, so looking at 18 and under, children with disabilities are, at the time of this study, which came out in 1993, 1.7 times more likely to experience intrafamilial maltreatment, 1.8 times more likely to be victims of sexual abuse, and over 2 times more likely to be victims of physical abuse. Furthermore, that study found that boys with disabilities over the age of 4 were at an especially heightened risk to being victims of a crime. Then, a few years later, in 1998, Sullivan and Knutson, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing Knutson right, it's K-N-U-T-S-O-N. So Sullivan and Knutson in 1998, using a Nebraska hospital's records, published a study that found that children with behavior disorders, sensory impairments, health impairments, and or intellectual disabilities were 1.8 times more likely to be neglected, 1.6 times more likely to be physically abused, and 2.2 times more likely to be sexually abused. So pretty consistent with the 1993 findings. Then you jump ahead to the year 2000. The same researchers, Sullivan and Knutson, conducted another study. And in this study is where we start to see the increase in crimes against children with disabilities. So this study found that in children with disabilities, they were at a 3.4 times more likely rate to be maltreated than children without disabilities. So children with disabilities had a 34% rate of being maltreated, whether it's physically, sexually, or any other type of abuse. So it's 34%, over a third of children with disabilities in the year 2000 in this study were found to be maltreated, whereas children that they had qualified as typically developing children were at 9%. They again found that boys were more likely than girls to be victimized, and that the younger children were at a greater risk than older children. However, the most victims were preschool age. This was the first main study to also point out that family members were the most common perpetrators of abuse. So then we jump ahead. That was the year 2000. The year 2009 to 2015, in the United States, there's a report that the Department of Justice puts out, and it looks at a period of time, and it basically is the United States government's way of quantifying victims of crime and discussing issues that arise. I'm going to discuss the most recent period of time, but you can actually Google the United States Department of Justice statistics on victimization of people with disabilities, and you can find a lot of history going back as to how this issue has kind of gotten worse or better throughout the years. But focusing on 2009 to 2015, there's a chart that you'll see on this if you look it up that shows that the rate of persons with disabilities being victimized is much higher than persons without disabilities. But specifically looking at the findings, since you guys can't see a chart that I'm looking at while I'm talking through a podcast, the report from the Bureau of Justice Statistics through the Department of Justice in the United States highlighted that in the years 2011 to 2015, the rate of violent victimization against persons with disabilities was at least 2.5 times the unadjusted rate for those without disabilities. And among those with disabilities, persons aged 12 to 15 had the highest rate of violent victimization among all of the age groups measured. So another thing that the Bureau of Justice Statistics pointed out for the years 2009 to 2015 was that the rate of violent victimization against males with disabilities was 31.8 males per 1,000, compared to 14.1 per 1,000 males without disabilities. For females with disabilities, the rate of violent victimization was 32.8 per 1,000, compared to the 11.4 per 1,000 for females without disabilities. So there are pretty significant differences in comparing victims with disabilities and victims without disabilities. And it's quite remarkable that most police forces and prosecutors' offices have very limited training in how to deal with a situation involving a victim with a disability, when statistics show that in this country, in the United States, it's incredibly common to have a victim that has at least one type of disability. The Bureau of Justice Statistics report also found that male and females had similar rates of total violent victimization in every disability type measured, except for people that really categorize their disabilities as being more independently living type of disabilities, so disabilities that affected their ability to live independently. Victims with disabilities also, though, moving on from that study, have historically underreported being victims of a crime or not reported at all. So a study done by Murphy in 2001 found that only 1 in 5 victims with disabilities make a formal complaint to police. And a CLARE study done in 2001 found that most complaints made to police by victims with disabilities were not followed through on by investigators or prosecutors. So the factors that they note in that CLARE study as reasons why they found that victims with disabilities didn't have their cases followed through on included difficulties in collecting evidence, difficulty in collecting testimony, and just a general lack of follow-through. And this presents a really frustrating problem because what I see when I read difficulty in collecting evidence or testimony is an inability or an unwillingness for a police force or for a prosecutor's office to identify the ways that they can properly collect evidence and testimony and provide accommodations and supports that would allow them to receive the evidence and testimony that they need to prove their case. The lack of follow-through is just maddening because when investigators or prosecutors decide to not follow through with these claims, that means that this person who has victimized a person with a disability is still out there and willing and able and likely perpetuating these crimes over and over again. And it gives the person with a disability just another reason to not make a formal complaint to police because nothing is being done even when they do report to police. So I'm starting to see many prosecutors' offices get on board with understanding the unique issues that arise when dealing with a victim that has a disability. And I'm also seeing some police forces, though really not enough, but I am seeing some police forces showing interest in being trained in these areas. But the other problem that involves victims with disabilities is that historically, people with disabilities have been regarded as unreliable witnesses in court. So there was a study done in 2003 by a person, I'm not even gonna try to pronounce this name, but their name is spelled G-U-D-J-O-N. S-S-O-N. And in 2003, that person conducted a study that found that historically people with disabilities were not used as witnesses. And when they were used as witnesses, judges failed to intervene when those witnesses were on the receiving end of intimidation tactics. So when dealing with a population that is susceptible to needing coping mechanisms for stress, it is vital that we prepare this witness for trial, but that we also keep in mind that people with disabilities are subject to different intimidation tactics by whichever side they're testifying against. This can present in really unique ways. So ways that affect their financial abilities, their financial stability, whether it's loss of a job, which a job can be very difficult to find for a person with a disability, not because they're not qualified, but because too many employers are not open to employing a person with a disability. But people with disabilities could also be subjected to family isolation, when family support is crucial for most people, but especially for a person with disability who might be dealing with constant emotional ups and downs, and they want to have that support system, and without that support system, they may feel like they can't face this on their own. And so there are really a wide range of intimidation tactics besides the just, oh, you better not testify against me kind of threats. And historically, that hasn't been taken into account by prosecutors' offices and law enforcement. But additionally, not only is it not taken into account, but this study has shown that judges don't intervene when they're seeing a witness or when there has been reported to the court that a witness is being intimidated when that witness has a disability. And so, again, it just speaks to how our courts have seen people with disabilities as being unreliable, whether they're reporting a crime or they're reporting that they're being subjected to intimidation tactics by one of the parties, or, you know, one of the sides in the case. So this is a huge issue, especially because, as I just stated, I mean, those are big numbers of victims with disabilities in this country. I mean, when you're talking over 30% of a population that is currently being victimized, these are not projected numbers. These are people that have reported crimes to the police. So when you also factor in that, you know, that Murphy study had said 1 in 5 report, it's much higher than 30% or 32% of people with disabilities that are subjected to violence and victimization. We're talking huge groups of people that aren't being listened to, they aren't being taken seriously, and our courts historically and our law enforcement offices and prosecutors' offices haven't been prepared or trained in accommodating these individuals. So that's why I have been so focused on providing trainings to those offices, because it can only help them do their jobs better if they are bringing to each case more tools in their toolbox for being able to get justice for those victims and also put away criminals that are likely to continue committing crimes against any population, but especially people with disabilities. So today the podcast is a little short just because if you haven't gone back and listened, my first podcast on this topic was Victims with Disabilities Part 1. So that podcast dives more into the issues that we face when trying to understand a victim with a disability and the differences in how they might appear or how they might relay what happened to them to an investigator or to the police or what have you. So go back and listen to that if you haven't had a listen. But this podcast is just a shorter podcast to talk about the specific statistics in this country, in the United States, about victims with disabilities and the statistics on reporting from those victims with disabilities. If you have any questions on this topic, or if you would like to have me provide resources or trainings to your office, school, or you individually, I am happy to discuss that with you further. My email address is legallyabled@gmail.com. So that's legallyabled@gmail.com. And my website is legallyabled.com, where you can read all of my blog posts pertaining to navigating life in the law with a disability. And I look forward to bringing you some really exciting podcasts that I've been working on very soon. So thank you and have a great week.